This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
The Alibi of Ignorance. Aldous Huxley wrote, "We lie to ourselves in order that we may still have the excuse of ignorance, the alibi of stupidity and incomprehension." It's a taunt. Huxley isn't talking about a simple mistake or a lack of IQ. They're suggesting that moments of not knowing, those times of feeling confused or just stressed, aren't accidents. They're strategic, a story about yourself that you protect, because if that story crumbles, who are you? Claiming a kind of stupidity as a legal defense for your own life, an alibi to avoid the accountability that comes with seeing things as they are. In a world that demands a projection of a perfect, high-performing self-image, this alibi becomes the most frequently used tool, telling yourself comforting lies to protect who you think you are. The capacity to process emotion is biologically fundamental, while emotional intelligence reflects how effectively we become aware of and use those emotional signals. Without it, your life becomes directionless, and your life becomes a series of performances rather than experiences. To understand why you hide, you have to understand the machinery of how you are feeling and why you've been taught to ignore the signals designed to save you. For decades, you have been fed a lie that to be irrational is to be unemotional, treating reason and emotion like warring factions. But neuroscientist Antonio Damasio turned this idea on its head. They argue that emotion isn't the antagonist of rationality. It is essential foundation. What made Damasio's work so revolutionary was that they weren't studying emotion in isolation. They were studying people who had lost the ability to feel normally due to damage in specific areas of the brain. Surprisingly, many of these individuals still scored highly on IQ tests and could explain logical solutions to problems in perfect detail. Yet they struggled to make even ordinary decisions about what to eat, where to go, and which option to choose. Their reasoning remained intact, but their lives became paralyzed by indecision. Damasio's conclusion was profound. Emotion is not something that disrupts rational thought. It is what allows rational thought to become actionable. Feeling gives thinking its priorities. Damasio discovered what he called somatic markers. These are physical emotional signals your brain uses to assign value to different options. Think of somatic markers as a kind of biological shorthand. Every significant experience leaves traces in the nervous system, long before conscious reasoning catches up. The body has already begun making predictions based on previous encounters. A tightening stomach, a racing heart, a sudden feeling of unease. These aren't irrational interruptions. They are accumulated data points distilled into sensation. The body remembers patterns long before the conscious mind turns them into a language. Without them, your ability to make even the simplest logical decision crumbles. Without emotional evaluation, decision-making can become severely impaired. Most of us maintain our alibi of ignorance by dismissing these signals as supplementary. To dismantle that alibi, you would have to distinguish between the two pillars of your internal architecture. First, there is emotional awareness. This is the act of noticing. It's a sensory work of naming an internal state, realizing, for instance, that the irritation you feel at your phone is actually a deep-seated fear of being unneeded. Second, there is emotional intelligence. This is the executive function. This is the choice you make after being aware of it. It's how the downstream decision of how to respond to that fear. When you dismiss these as soft, you're opting for a haze, navigating reality, pretending you're being logical while you're actually just being defensive. But understanding the why of emotion is only the beginning. The real challenge is that your body speaks a language your mind often refuses to hear in real time. Consider a period of prolonged stress, such as university exam season or a high-stakes work project. During these periods, attention is directed toward managing immediate demands. When the stressor ends, some people experience an unexpected sense of emptiness or reduced motivation. This isn't a cognitive failure, it's a neurological lag. The amygdala can rapidly detect emotionally significant information, often before conscious evaluation is complete. While the prefrontal cortex helps interpret and regulate those responses, your body knows before your mind can explain. This isn't because the emotional brain is primitive and the rational brain is advanced, as popular culture often suggests. Modern neuroscience increasingly shows that these systems are deeply interconnected. The amygdala acts as an early warnings network, scanning for significance and potential threats, while the prefrontal cortex helps interpret, regulate, and contextualize those signals. Rather than opponents, they function more like dance partners. Problems arise not when emotions exist, but when the communication between these systems break down. It's called internal signaling. Interoception. Interoception is the sensory system that allows you to feel and interpret internal physical signals. Many neuroscientists, like Lisa Barrett and Sarah Garfinkel, often describe interoception as the brain's eighth sense. Just as vision tracks the external world, interoception tracks the internal one. It constantly monitors heartbeat, breathing, muscle tension, hunger, temperature, and countless other things, suggesting that people with stronger interoceptive awareness often demonstrate greater emotional regulation because they detect emotional states earlier before they escalate into overwhelming reactions. In a very real sense, emotional awareness begins not in the mind, but in the body's ability to report on itself. The problem is what we call cognitive load. When buried under notifications, deadlines, and the pressure to look like everything is as it should be, high cognitive load can reduce awareness of internal bodily signals. A high-velocity life acts as a sensory muffler, mistaking the noise of being busy for the truth of experience. To break the alibi, you would have to decode that noise, engaging in a kind of rhythmic call-and-response with the body, if that's what you'd like to call it. Some hear irritation, but the signal truth? That's deep, profound exhaustion. Some people call it anger, but if you look closer, it's a social performance to hide an underlying hurt. Some claim it's general stress, but the truth is a fear of failure, a threat to the self-story of competence you have worked so hard to build. You say you're just tired, but the signal is a deep disconnect, a result of a culture that asks us to document our lives rather than inhabit them. Once you name the signal, the alibi ends, and that's when the real cost begins. Awareness is expensive. It demands that you look in the mirror and potentially see someone you don't recognize. Consider an athlete facing retirement. For decades, their self-story has been one of strength, independence, and elite capability. But then emotional awareness starts to leak through. They feel a deep-seated fear of being unneeded. If they acknowledge that fear, their entire identity is threatened. The gap between the steady person performing in the world and the chaotic reality of what you actually feel is what Carl Rogers called incongruence. Rogers believed that psychological suffering often emerges when people become attached to what he called conditions of worth, the belief that they are only valuable when they meet certain expectations. Maybe it's being successful, strong, productive, agreeable, or independent. Over time, these conditions become so ingrained that parts of self are pushed out of awareness entirely. Incongruence is the tension created when lived experience collides with the image you feel obligated to maintain. When reality clashes with your self-concept, it creates cognitive dissonance. This isn't just a psychological term, it's genuine psychological discomfort. The concept was first developed by social psychologist Leon Festinger in the 1950s. Festinger observed that when people's beliefs, actions, and identities contradict one another, they experience a form of psychological discomfort that demands resolution. The fascinating part is that we often reduce this discomfort not by changing our behavior, but by changing our interpretation of reality, rationalizing, justifying, constructing explanations. In other words, we build alibis. To avoid this pain, the alibi of ignorance is our primary defense. You would rather stay in the dark than pay the price of rewriting yourself. Using the alibi to prosecute feelings so those comfortable lies remain. Reaching this crossroads of insight generally has you make one of three choices. Dismiss it. Ignore the insight because it's too threatening to your story. Project it. Shift the emotion. I'm not the problem. They're just being difficult. And if you ask me, they normally are. Or integration, allowing the truth to reshape the story. This is the only path to authentic change. The struggle for honesty dictates how to show up in the world. The philosopher Soren Kierkegaard famously said that life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. It's called the hindsight paradox, understanding the argument or the missed chance only after the moment has passed. Sociologist Irving Goffman pointed out that much of our lives are spent in social performance, so busy managing the impressions others have of us, the performance of being steady and functional, that we stop experiencing the moments ourselves. Goffman's work treated everyday life almost like a theater. He argued that social interaction consists of front stage and backstage behavior. Front stage is the version of ourselves we present to others. He curated identity designed to fit a particular audience. Backstage is where the performance drops and the unfiltered self emerges. The challenge of modern life is that technology has blurred these boundaries. Social media encourages us to remain perpetually upfront, constantly aware of how our lives appear rather than how they feel. You see this in our documenting culture. Think of the person at the concert holding up their phone. They are recording the moment to remember it later, but by doing so, they have removed themselves from the emotional now. They are performing the role of an attendee rather than participating in the event. The goal of emotional maturity is to shorten the temporal gap between feeling a sensation and understanding its meaning. It's about moving from coping to responding. Coping is reactive. It's survival. It's about minimizing feelings just to get through the day. Responding is intentional. It's an executive choice. It requires staying connected to yourself long enough to let the moment teach you something while you're still inside it. Psychologists have long noted that self-deception is often most effective when it remains invisible to the person engaging in it. The lies that shape our lives are rarely the ones we consciously tell. They are the assumptions we stop questioning. Growth isn't about fixing a broken machine. It's about the scientific honesty of noticing. This journey toward dismantling your alibi follows the four-stage cycle of integration. Step 1. Awareness. Identifying the physical signal through the noise of your daily load. Insight. Recognizing what that signal reveals about your true needs or fears. Then intelligence. It's the executive moment. You decide to act with honesty rather than falling back on a defensive performance. And lastly, living differently. Translating that choice into a new way of being until the gap between your truth and your performance finally closes. The alibi of ignorance is a choice. You can continue to manage your life through performance, or you can choose to participate in it. The highest form of emotional intelligence is not a complex analysis. It's gentler. It is simple, quiet act of paying attention, noticing when you finally stop performing and start listening to what is already there. Trade the comfort of self-deception for the clarity of participation. Growth is the quiet act of paying attention. We lie to ourselves in order that we may still have the excuse of ignorance. Try not to give yourself that excuse.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.